Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Poore, and my guest today is Green Party gubernatorial candidate Howie Hawkins. And Howie is here to discuss the Working Family Party and the endorsement of Cynthia Nixon. So I don't think it came as any surprise to anybody that the Working Family Party endorsed her. What do you think?
Well, the way things developed this week, it was pretty clear a couple of days ago. But, you know, most of the unions now, I think all the unions have pulled out of Working Families Party. So I'm not sure what that means. The main constituent groups of Working Families Party have been funded by the unions. That would be Citizen Action, New York Communities for Change, and Make the Road.
Okay.
And so they, you know, I admire them for challenging Cuomo and not just backing off because of their money sources. But also what happened, you know, the reporters said, well, you're going to continue on the Working Families line if you lose the Democratic primary. And Cynthia Nixon wouldn't commit to that. She just said, we'll sit on
right.
the Working Families Party. So it looks to me like if she doesn't win the Democratic primary, there's a move the Working Families can do. They've done it in the past as they nominate Cynthia Nixon for a judgeship somewhere. But on the other hand, you may have to be a lawyer to run in those races. So it may be like Cuomo staying on the liberal line in 2002 and not really campaigning. And, you know, Carl McCall was the Democratic nominee. And
right.
the liberals lost their ballot line. So it's kind of dicey for the Working Families Party right now. But I respect yeah. them for standing up for their, you know, principles against Cuomo, who's been bad on issues they care about.
Well, there was talk a while back that if Cynthia Nixon ran on the Working Family Party line, if she lost the endorsement of the Democrats, and with your candidacy, the two of you might be enough to offset Cuomo, and that would allow a Republican to slip into office. What do you think about that?
If that's a scenario in the fall, that's a possibility. And, you know, what we've always said in the Green Party is we've got to change the way we elect single offices. Instead of it being plurality take all, which means the minority vote can take the office, like we just saw in the presidential election, we should have ranked choice voting and instant runoff. So you rank your choices in order of preference. So, you know, a Green might rank me first, Cynthia Nixon second, and then they can figure out whether Cuomo or Molinaro, say, or is their third choice. But in any case, if your first choice ends up last in any round, they're eliminated and those ballots go to the second choices. So the ballots are distributed until one candidate gets over a majority. So that's the instant runoff part. But you do it by ranking your choices in the first when you fill out your ballot. And that way you get the most preferred candidate elected and voters don't have to worry about voting strategically for the lesser evil to stop the greater evil. That's the answer to that problem. I'll tell you one thing, the Green Party's not going to, you know, just fold up our tents and go home because being in the race might end up electing a Republican. You know, we improve races by raising issues the other parties won't raise. We tend to pull the whole politics, the whole discussion our way. And that makes for better results. I mean, for example, here in my congressional district, the only time a Democrat has beat a Republican and got elected to Congress in the last 100 years is when there was a Green Party candidate on the ballot. And I think the dynamic there was the Greens raised real issues. The Democrat, instead of being sort of just to the left of the Republican but trying to capture the center right, had to come out for progressive positions, and they did much better. So, you know, I think we improve elections. So I don't, you know, if the election's spoiled, it's because the system is rotten. You know, the winner-take-all, plurality-take-all system.
Mm-hmm. you've listened to Cuomo and Nixon, and, you know, you've been on Focus on Albany a number of times. What do you think so far about how they are articulating the issues? Let's start with Cuomo.
Well, Cuomo has definitely moved to the left, at least rhetorically, on a lot of issues. And I think that's because in 2014, he lost a lot of progressive votes, first to Zephyr Teachout in the primary, and then to me in the general election. And it was about the same number of votes, just under 200,000. So he asked himself, how do I get those votes? And he had to adopt some of our issues, like the ban on fracking, or at least make gestures toward, I don't know if Zephyr Teachout raised this, I was calling for tuition-free public higher education. And so Cuomo came up with the Excelsior Scholarship Program, which is not really tuition-free public education, higher education for everybody. It makes it available to some people. So he partly moved our way. And same thing with the $15 minimum wage. I mean, the minimum wage here is $10.40 in Syracuse. We got a long way. In fact, we get to $12.50, then they're going to study whether they want to go to $15. So he sort of grabs the headline, I'm for the $15 minimum wage, but then you look at the details and not so much. So that's what Cuomo's been doing. You know, he talks left but still walks right. And I think the core of that is his fiscal policies and his economic development policies. His fiscal policies continue what started in the Reagan era of flattening the tax, the progressivity of the income tax. So they raised the bottom bracket from 2% to 4%, and the top bracket was cut from, you know, a little over 15% for the very top bracket to 6.85%, and there's a millionaire's tax on there temporarily that gets it up above, just above 9% or just almost 2.9%. So they cut high brackets and raised low brackets. And meanwhile, they stopped collecting the stock transfer tax, or they collected, but they rebate it right back to Wall Street. So he says he's a progressive who's broke to excuse why he doesn't fully fund public schools and other programs. And I'm a progressive who knows where the money is. The rich are getting richer. They should pay more taxes so we can have a strong public sector. So that's his fiscal policy. And he also doesn't share revenues with municipalities. Revenue sharing, aid and incentives to municipalities, has been frozen for a decade and is projected to be frozen for the next 5 years. And that has really put local government in a burden. Plus, the state imposes programs on local government and doesn't pay for them. So in this state, 15% of our property and sales tax revenue go to pay for state programs, unfunded mandates. That's off the chart compared to any other state. Most other states, it's near zero. So that's why we have high property taxes and why so many of our cities and counties and towns upstate are in fiscal distress. So we need to restore revenue sharing, and progressive taxation can pay for it. And then when it comes to economic development, he wants to give out corporate welfare to campaign contributors. It just fuels that pay-to-play culture of corruption. And even where they don't find and prove in court a quid pro quo, you know, legalized, illegal bribe, these campaign contributions are legalized bribery because it's unstated. You know, you get campaign contributions to the governor, and the governor makes sure you're taken care of. So he hands out these economic development grants and contracts and regulatory favors to campaign contributors. That's the trend. And that's called trickle-down economics. You give rich folks more money, and they're supposed to invest, create jobs, and the rest of us benefit. But that's not what happens. We have excess capacity in the economy, so when the rich folks get money, they don't build a new factory and hire people. They buy stocks and bonds, and that's just trading who has the right to income from the factories we already got. So that doesn't work. Trickle-down doesn't trickle down. So we're calling for a Green New Deal to revitalize the public sector, the schools, the mass transit, the housing, and particularly clean energy, because we've got to transition in the, you know, by 2030 to 100% clean energy in an industrial economy like New York if the planet's going to have a chance to avoid catastrophic climate change. So we counterpose our Green New Deal to his corporate welfare and our progressive taxation to his claim that he's a progressive who's broke.
Now, how do you rate how Cynthia Nixon is articulating the issues right now?
Well, she's got a lot of good positions on some particular issues, like fully funding the public schools, like legalizing marijuana and treating drug abuse as a health problem, not a criminal problem. But just to take the school issue, we got to go a lot further. Full funding is not enough if the schools are still segregated. And we're imposing this high-stakes testing on them to rank them. And what happens is the high poverty score low, and then those low scores are used to say the schools are failing, and then close those public schools and replace them with privately managed charter schools. You know, and the hedge funders in Wall Street are really pushing that agenda because for them it's a way to make money. There's a whole new industry around testing and privately managed charter schools where they can make a lot of money. There's real estate involved and all kinds of things. And so the high-stakes testing, it doesn't, you know, we're not against tests for diagnostic purposes to find out what students know and don't know. But these high-stakes tests, which they just took this week in English language, they don't get the results till after the school year is over. So it doesn't even help the students or the teachers teaching those students. It's all about ranking the schools. And the plan is to, you know, use the low-ranking schools to set up charter schools. So that has to be addressed, and I haven't heard Cynthia Nixon do that. And then segregation. New York schools are more segregated than Mississippi's. We have the most segregated schools in the nation. An indicator of that is that two-thirds of black students in New York State go to schools that are 90% or more minority. And what we know since Brown versus Board of Education, the only education reform that has radically reduced the achievement gaps based on race and class or socioeconomic background is desegregation. When you mix up low-income and middle-income kids, low-income kids come up, and the middle-income kids don't go down, and on those standardized test scores, and they all do better on other measures, other things we want students to get in school, like intellectual self-confidence, leadership skills, problem-solving and creativity, teamwork and collaboration, and tolerance. So there are good reasons for everybody to desegregate our schools, but I haven't heard a word on that from Cynthia Nixon. So, you know, even on that issue where she's come out strong, and I agree, we got to fully fund our public schools, we need to do much more than that to get really good education to all our children.
What has she said anything about economic development?
She's, you know, criticized Cuomo for, you know, some of these, like I was earlier, the corporate welfare. I really haven't heard a developed position on, okay, if we're not going to do that, what are we going to do? And, you know, I've been calling for a Green New Deal. This will be the third election, which a lot of people have sort of boiled down to, let's do build a system of clean, renewable energy. It will create, and according to one study, over 4 million construction jobs building it out, and then over 58,000 permanent jobs. But it always meant more to revitalize the whole public sector. For example, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the MTA down in New York, needs $100 billion just to bring the tracks, the cars, the signals, and the stations up to grade. And then it needs more to extend that service to the outer boroughs and neighborhoods that aren't covered. And then we need even more to upgrade our public transportation systems in the cities upstate. So that's a huge area where we need public investment. Public housing, they need $25 billion just to get rid of the roaches, the rats, the lead paint, the mold in the public housing down there, which have had disinvestment from the federal and state government for decades now. And in our position in the Green Party, you know, the rent is too damn high. I mean, Jimmy McMillan was right about that. In this state, half the renters pay over 30% of their income, the standard of affordability, for rent. The way to, you know, bring those rents down is to build out public housing and make it available not just to low-income people but to middle-income people. That's what they do in Europe. In a lot of those European countries, about 30% of the housing is public. They call it social housing. And it's mixed income, so you have both middle class and working class and poor people all living in the same developments, and they're high quality. So we're talking about expanding public housing, so it's mixed income, scattered sites, so it's not all these big projects that ghettoize poor people, and they should be green. They should be net producers of solar power that add to our renewable energy base. And they should be of such quality that any community would want them in their community, whether it's, you know, a devastated neighborhood in an inner city or an affluent suburb, because they're high-quality projects. So all those areas of public investment is how we get the economy going. You know, it's a bottom-up demand-side approach. And you increase demand and among working people, and they spend that money, and then businesses have to expand to meet that demand and hire more people. That's how you get the economy going, from the bottom up, not this trickle-down nonsense that's really just about rich people getting their taxes cut and investing in the stock market.
Every time we talk, you know, you really do a good job of explaining the issues. And a number of other candidates, they just give sound bites. What do you think is going to take for the people to wake up and really understand and listen to the issues?
I think it's going to take organizing. I mean, for me, what we need is a party, and we're trying to do this in the Green Party, where the county committee isn't just to mobilize people to, you know, get votes for their team, you know, Democrat, Republican, or whatever, but it's actually a place where people can go and talk about what are our problems and what are their causes and what are the real solutions. I mean, you don't go to a Democratic committee meeting to talk about those kinds of things. You go there to get your petitions, and you're expected to get a certain number of signatures. And then when election day comes, you're expected to, you know, drop some leaflets and make some phone calls and get people to vote. But it's never a discussion about what we should do. And one of the problems we've had over the last half century is civic organizations have declined. There are very few places where people get together and talk about these things, whether it's an NAACP chapter or a, social lodge, you know, the Masons or whatever, PTAs. Very few, these civic organizations have withered, so people don't even know how to conduct meetings and what Robert's rules are, and, you know, how you give everybody a fair chance to speak and make a decision and record the result so you know what you decided and you don't start over the next time you get together. I mean, all those things have withered. And instead, we're sitting there and the mass media is feeding us messages, and now we have the Internet. So a lot of people who consider themselves activists really don't sit down in a local meeting and strategize and make a decision. They get a message over the Internet, show up here, show up there. And you look at, well, who's sending those messages? They tend to be paid staff, and you find out, well, who's paying them? And a lot of times it's the same donors to the Democratic Party on the liberal side and the Republican Party on the conservative side who fund their candidates. So people are basically being mobilized, but they're not being organized and educated. So, you know, we need to develop grassroots organizations where people talk to each other and develop their own analysis and understanding and education. So I think that's what it's going to take. Otherwise, people will just, respond to the bumper sticker slogans, and nobody will really change. I mean, I think the general trend in our society is more progressive in terms of social issues. And that, you know, we saw that with, for example, gay marriage went from something all the politicians were afraid to touch to one they quote-unquote evolved on very quickly over about 7 years. I mean, here in New York, it was the Green mayor and deputy mayor of New Paltz, New York, started performing same-sex marriages. And they got an injunction against them from Elliot Spitzer, the Democratic Attorney General. But it kicked off a movement that by 7 years later, people are saying, yeah, of course, you know, as Al Sharpton said, you know, there's not enough love, you know, so if people want to get married, let them.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of drama going on in this state senate. There's going to be a special election next week. But if the two, and the special election in Westchester and for Diaz's seat, if they remain in Democratic, on the Democratic side, then the numbers will be the same as they are now. And that would be a one-seat majority for the Democrats. I mean, I'm sorry, for the Republicans. And that one seat is Felder in Brooklyn. Now, in the event he wins the primary and he wins the general, and he's the wild card, and both the Republicans and Democrats will try to woo him over to their side. If you are elected mayor, governor, and you're witnessing all this, and you don't want to see chaos, what would you do?
Well, I don't know if anybody can handle Simcha Felder. He's got his own base, and as I understand it, he's a registered Democrat, but in some elections he's had both the Democrat and Republican support. So, you know, he's one voice among 63 senators, and, you know, the governor just has to present his or her position and, you know, negotiate with the people elected on the Senate side. I mean, the one thing I wouldn't do is allow Jeff Klein, you know, to reconstitute the Independent Democratic Conference and ally with the Republicans so they can, you know, get their Lulus back and everything else they got for that move. I wouldn't enable it like Cuomo did. You know, I would publicly ridicule them and use the bully pulpit to say, you know, are you Democrats or Republicans? I'm a Green, I'm neither, but, you know, you can't play with the people this way.
I think it's going to be very interesting as this entire election unfolds. So, Howie, you know, you're really terrific at articulating the issues, and I'm going to share this on social media as much as I can. But I really think that with the sound bites and the 30-second commercials, that you could set the tone for this election. And I'd like to talk with you from time to time so you could share your thoughts on Focus on Albany. I think you could add a lot to this campaign. So would that be okay for you?
Yeah, I'll be happy to come back, and we will do, you know, our 30-second ads that will be on social media for sure. And, you know, we don't have a big budget, but we'll get some, you know, on the commercial media as well. And hopefully that will, you know, get people interested in our campaign, and they won't stop with the 30-second, you know, brief presentation, but find out more.
Okay, so I look forward to talking with you again as this drama unfolds. So you've been listening to Howie Hawkins, who is the candidate for governor on the Green Party line. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Howie, the best of luck, and I look forward to talking with you again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.